time to start the FTN show.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge Narrative. My name is Paul Murphy, your host. On this episode, we're going to be talking about the Adeptus Mechanicus. This is going to get the sneak peek at the Codex. Hang out with us. This is episode 206. We are the Bella Lost Souls podcast. I'm joined tonight by Andrew Whitaker.
What's up, homies?
And Chris Morgan.
I'd Mechanicum, but I can't.
This section is sponsored by the Table of Ultimate Gaming. At the time we're recording this, it has 14 days left to go on its Kickstarter. They're going to be even less by the time you hear this, released on Saturday. They're up to almost $740,000.
Woof.
Yes, it's been crazy successful. They've got lots of new designs, stuff that I think can match the decor of anybody's gaming area or even your dining room or coffee table. They got lots of different options there worth checking out. The belief in the product, and you heard it in the interview with them a couple of weeks ago with us, is that people are flocking to the Kickstarter. You owe it to yourself to at least look at it. Just go check it out and see if there's any styles that match what you want. But we're going to be talking about Adeptus Mechanicus. This codex goes up for pre-order the day you're hearing this. And if you've been playing them with the index, a lot of things are going to be similar to you. But there also comes a ton of new rules in the Forge World rules. When I say that, it's almost like Space Marine Chapter Tactics. You're going to be able to pick a Forge World dogma and assign it to your army that's going to influence how you build the army. You're going to get stratagems specific to your army and some really cool relics.
We always want to see more of 40K becoming fully fleshed out.
Every new release makes the game better. With every new release, that you add complexity to the game, you're adding an animal to the ecosystem. And every time you do that, the balance of power shifts. So it's good for the game, good for list creation, and I'm a big fan.
In this book, there are also the knights. So all the base plastic knights have rules in this book. So there's a ton in here. And I said, some of the stuff, we'll talk about it, but it's very similar to the index. And so if you've been playing it, there are going to be things that are very familiar to you. And I think you're only going to make some changes based on maybe the stratagems you want to use or the Forge Worlds you want to go for. Book's got all the stuff in it you might expect. It's got some paint scheme suggestions. It tells you about some of the lesser Forge Worlds, almost like Second Founding type Space Marine stuff. I'm only using that as an analogy. It has nothing to do with Space Marines, but I'm just saying that's something that you're probably familiar with, Chapter Tactics and Successor Chapters. And then there's Forge World dogmas and other Forge Worlds they talk about in the book that are similar to this, but the main set of Forge Worlds have a specific rules just for them.
That's also pretty cool. It makes me wonder what they're going to do for some of the other, like say, Space Wolves or Dark Angels, you know, things that in the past haven't really had too much distinction between like the founder and the successor. Now, speaking from a 30K perspective, tons of personality. So to see that realized on the tabletop is really exciting for me.
Yeah, I think so. This is going to be neat.
I definitely think that it is an incredibly positive sign to see this for someone who wants to see Catechins play differently from Talarn or Cadian or Vestroians within the guard book. It's really cool to see the different, you know, Forge Worlds play differently.
Everybody knows the Catechins do better in close combat than any other guard regiment.
Exactly. You know, it brings the fluff to life, and that's so important for gamers and for people who are buying into this hobby in its totality. You know, like, yeah, Catechin guys, those are the jungle fighters. They're in your grill. They're fighting you close combat. You know, the Cadians are the rank and file guys. They're marshaled. I really want to see that happen. And it's such an awesome thing to see it happen in the Mechanicum book as it's being released now. Spoilers for anyone who's listening intentionally. The Forge Worlds are unique and they play a certain way. And that's a positive thing for the game.
The Canicles, the Omnisci, are something that all the Forge Worlds can take a benefit of. There's some mechanical manipulation that you can do with Mars. Mars specifically has some mechanical manipulation. So I'm gonna kind of read it out here to how you choose your Canicles, and then they will come up later. So all units with this ability gain a bonus during the battle, depending on the Canicle of the Omnisci currently being canted. At the start of each battle round, pick which Canicle of the Omnisci from the table below is in effect for the duration of the battle round. This is at the battle round, not player turn. I think that's probably an important distinction. The same Canicle may not be picked twice during the same battle. also very important. Alternatively, you can randomly determine which canticle of the Omnissiah is in effect by rolling a d6 and consulting the table below. Note that if you randomly determine a canticle, it takes effect even if the same canticle has been in effect earlier in the battle. If you have a Battleforged army, units only receive the bonus if every model in their detachment has the ability.
So if I'm understanding this correctly, this is going to be extremely powerful if you have good rolls on this in the early game.
Yeah, and then you can also just pick one if you needed one specifically for that turn or the next turn or whatever, that however they take effect.
Yeah, that's one of the things I love about 8th edition 40K is the power to choose. Like the ability as a player to decide for myself what I need.
Well, I like this here that it gives you both things. It's not one of those, it's like, before the game, pick or roll randomly if you'd like to determine what your relic or psychic power is. This tells you over the course of the game, you have the spelled out explicit option of picking a canticle or rolling and seeing what happens.
I think that that's a cool in-game, it's a decision point that was what's going to separate kind of the men from the boys on whether or not, hey, on this particular turn, I want to pick, but I can never pick again, right? So if I foresee needing this later in the game and really want it later in the game, I'm going to have to roll for it.
Yes.
But essentially, going into that, people should know that from a list design standpoint, you have to say, well, hey, there's these particular forge worlds have great bonuses, but this forge world allows me to manipulate my canticle roll. So I think that's a cool, I'm just happy, again, I'm so happy when creativity and list design options exist in the 40K meta. And I think that this particular codex is a big step in the right direction.
Now, what I want to go ahead and jump to is the forge world dogmas. This is something where now they've got it. You know how the books are laid out now. You get the army base rules. You get to see all the options, all the things you can pick, and then it goes into a little bit more of the detail, kind of as you want to. Mars, the first one. Each time you randomly determine which canticle the Omnissiah is being canted, roll two dice instead of one. All units with this dogma receive the benefit of both results instead of just the result of the first dice. If a duplicate is rolled, no additional canticle is canted this turn. This, on the surface, you're rolling two dice, you're probably going to get two separate ones. What you just mentioned, though, about Call, but Belisarius Call, he's a 250-point character. His stats are fairly the same. He can heal any Imperium faction as opposed to just a Forge World dedicated Adeptus Mechanicus faction. I believe that may be what his index says now, but he can heal any Imperium. So if you're sprinkling him in somewhere, you can probably still do that. But in a Forge World Mars detachment, he has the ability to plus or minus the dice rolled. So roll two dice, plus and or minus, and at your leisure, you're never going to get a duplicate. You're probably going to get the good one, whatever that is, for the battlefield conditions every round. He's a big big manipulator of the canticles.
And it's really, remember again, that you can burn a command point to reroll a canticle roll. I think it's pre-phase as well, so you're not...
This at the battle, at the beginning of the battle round. There's no phase.
Exactly. There's no phase at that point, so you're not taking the punishment on the reroll for any of the substantive phases, which means if you have Call and you're taking the Mars Forge World, you have plus command points, you have an incredible amount of manipulation up and down the canticle chart, and then you're going to have two per turn. And that's a huge army... army buffs and force multipliers are how you win this game. There's no doubt about that. And so it stands to reason that there are going to be some phenomenal lists that get generated out of that Mars Forge World dogma that take advantage of maximizing those canticles.
This is one of those things to where I think if you are taking Mars, you're probably taking Call automatically. Yeah, it's just, it's right there. You might as well maximize the benefit. And before I forget, all of these, if you're taking a battle-forged detachment of Adeptus Mechanicus, the troops will get the OPSEC under the Soldiers of the Machine God rule. This is something we're seeing in every codex, to where if you commit to the faction in a detachment, then you're going to get the OPSEC. You control an objective, even if you don't have the most models around it, which is nice.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with you. It feels like hey, I'm going to play Ultramarines. Okay. Are you going to bring Rowboat? Yes, you are. Right. It's kind of a no brainer, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. Right. I mean, you want to play with the big named cool characters. So I don't resent that at all.
He's an amazing model. He's got cool rules. It's the perfect storm of what you want to see on the table. The next Forge World is the Graia, G-R-A-I-A. The Refusal to Yield
Graia,
is the name of it.
Maybe?
Close enough. Yeah, we'll go with that. Roll a d6 each time a model with this dogma is slain or flees. On a 6, that model refuses to yield. Either the wound that slew it is ignored or the model does not flee. However, Forge World units with this dogma cannot fall back unless there is a friendly Forge World character on the battlefield. Now, it doesn't say near the unit, within 6 inches or whatever, it just says on the battlefield. But this, on a 6, that model refuses to yield is pretty strong, because it can happen. You could even roll that in the morale phase.
Yeah, that's the part that kind of makes this stand out to me is I don't think there is any other mechanic in the game that lets you save someone from running away. Is there something else you guys can think of within the indexes and the codexes that...
Certainly not. This is a new phenomenon. And I think that the saving somebody from running away is what makes kind of takes us over the top. Essentially, and this is...
Hang on 1 second, though. Remember, just so everyone's all thinking about the same thing, is that in the morale phase, you're removing whole models, not wounds
Correct.
Off of things. You're picking up Correct. Whole models. So Correct. This is that, saving whole models, potentially.
And that is especially important in light of the way that the majority of tournaments and competitive environments, and even Beer and Pretzels games that I've played, have ruled that... the last wound mechanic. This is essentially a feel no pain save. It works the same way. It reads identically to Mephiston's Lord of Death rule or Yarik's 3+ rule. When you would lose a wound, then you roll this dice. And so the least abusive way to read that ruling is Commander Yarik is a great example because he says when the last wound, you know, I shoot him with a las cannon, and then I roll a 6. Well, he needs to roll 6 3+s to stay alive. Same way Mephiston would need to make 6 5+s or something like that. That's the least abusive way to read that rule, and what I have seen consistently every tournament that has ruled on it has ruled it that way, that I've played in. All that to say, that is very substantively very different than the morale rule. That says, hey, you failed your morale check, you have to remove a whole model. It doesn't matter how many wounds that particular model may be. So, as it relates to a lot of the units and models in the Adeptus Mechanicus and Skitarii options, whether that's Breachers, Robots, or two wound the Stalkers, etc., there's a lot of multi-wound models. And so if you fail that morale test, instead of taking 2 or 3 or 4 quote-unquote feel-no-pain saves, you're taking a single feel-no-pain save. And that is awesome because that will save your bacon the time that you roll that save. I don't hate that dogma at all. It's essentially an army-wide 6+ feel-no-pain, and you can really do quality list designs around that idea.
Metallica, the Relentless March. I know there's probably people out there with their color schemes that have been waiting on Forge World Metallica or maybe have probably been using whatever their version of Forge World Metallica is for years now. If a unit with this dogma advances, it can ignore the penalty for firing assault weapons and treats all rapid fire weapons it's armed with as assault weapons until the end of the turn. E.g., a rapid fire one weapon is treated as an assault one weapon.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Shooting as strong as it is, having that mobility advantage, being able to move and get in where you want to get and lay down some more reliable firepower is always a good thing.
Well, it turns rapid fire weapons into assault weapons, and then I think you can go even one step further then and remove the penalty from assault weapons, so you're firing, you're on the move with these weapons and no negative.
Paul and I kind of got pretty granular about how to read this rule, and we won't bore you with the details, but essentially the way we understand this dogma is your assault weapons and your rapid fire weapons, go ahead and advance with them. There's no penalty. That's what it gets down to in brass tacks, which is pretty interesting. Kind of the way this, I think, is a big bonus to troops. Both the Skitarii Rangers and the Skitarii Vanguard have either assault 3 or rapid fire 1 weapons with the galvanic rifles or the radium carbines. And so if you've got a galvanic rifle, this now allows a ranger, for example, to move 6, advance, and then shoot 30 inches, and then you get the bonuses.
Kastari Rangers do have they got the galvanic rifles, rapid fire 1, and then the Vanguard have an assault 3, what is it, radium carbine at 18 inches.
That's correct. And I think, I mean, just on the cold read, based on the points, my opinion is that the Vanguard are significantly better than the Rangers. The rolling 6 and doing 2 damage is really, really strong. And then the volume of shots is better. 18 inches as opposed to 30. Obviously, the galvanic rifle has an advantage there. But if I can move, advance, and then shoot, I'm not nearly as range limited as I otherwise would be. So good options for list designers. And then there's other, if as units get released and as we kind of dig deeper into this book, if you see other assault weapons, well, you're like,
the,
wow.
The Corpuscari Electro Priest, they have a movement of 6 with their electrostatic gauntlets that are assault 3. And then each hit with a roll of a 6+ with his weapon causes 3 hits instead of 1.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I am pretty fond of the Electro Priests in 8th edition.
So, you know, I don't know if that makes them better in a choice in an elite slot, but, you know, that is a lot of shots and potentially a lot of hits coming from, you know, no penalty, being able to go at least, you know, probably 8-9 inches up and then firing the 12-inch guns.
Sad but true.
Lucius is the next forgeable dogma. When making saving throws, units with this dogma treat enemy attacks with an armor penetration characteristic of -1 as having armor penetration of 0 instead. This makes you very resistant to Storm Ravens.
And heavy bolters.
Well, they're on the Storm Ravens. You know, the assault cannons and the heavy bolts on the front. The cheap Storm Raven.
Yeah. So this rule troubles me. I mean, I think that if I'm being honest, and you know, I this is in my opinion by far the weakest of the dogmas. If you're going to play a competitive, unless you're like a diehard fluff player of this particular Forge World,
you haven't seen the stratagems. Yeah,
that's true.
We haven't talked about that. And warlord traits. I mean, there's things that factor in relics or whatever. But
for
on
sure,
the surface, I think this is not going to come up as often.
Right. If it would be different if it said you treat all AP modifiers as less than they otherwise would be. As opposed, this is so like -1 counts as nothing. But if you've got a -2, I'm still -2.
Yeah.
Right. Like that's a huge difference. And it's a big power. It's a important. Clearly powerful modifier that is intentionally truncated, and it's not a good option. Not everyone wins. I understand that.
Well,
we're participating.
I think what you're saying is you're not going to play into that. You're not going to build towards this. There has to be something else there for you to want to consider this dogma.
That is a 1,000. Yes, exactly. You have to be either a giant fluff player for this particular Forge World, or there's going to be a stratagem buried in there that makes this incredibly powerful in order for it to be even on your radar as a competitive player.
This next Forge World is the Agrippina, Staunch Defenders. Now, this is pretty good. This Forge World has a cool stratagem we'll talk about in a few minutes. Well, I like it anyway. And it's got this that also plays into the what I'm going to tell you about in a second. When firing Overwatch, units with this dogma hit on a roll of 5+ instead of 6, irrespective of modifiers. So if something's -1 to hit or something like that, I think you'd still always be hitting on that 5+ with Overwatch.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that would become a natural boon for eating berserker charges, for example.
The Stygies 8 is the next Forge World dogma. Your opponents must subtract 1 from their hit rolls when shooting at units with this dogma if they are more than 12 inches away.
Speaking of Raven Guard, I mean, Alpha Legion, I mean...
I don't mind them spreading it around.
No, I mean, I think that, you know, as this is clearly, if you're depending on the canticles and how you're going to manipulate the Mars Forge World, I think this is the front runner for the most powerful of the dogmas. -1 to hit. We play a D6 game, right? And Paul said this before. This is kind of a recurring theme on the show. Anytime you can change a pip on the die, you are substantively and dramatically affecting the game. It's a 17% change, and that's huge. That's massive shifts, and it's very, very powerful. You want to do it when you can, and so pending the stratagems and pending some particular list designs, I think this is an early front runner for one of the most powerful dogma, especially in light of how much shooting is in the ADMEC codex, and shooting at range,
and
30,
it's just
36.
Always on. It's just
exactly.
You don't have to roll anything. You don't have to burn anything. This just happens.
It's just full stop. And we're gonna get into a little bit later in the show that the Dune, the Onagers, and the Castellan robots, and the breachers, and the stratagems that allow to really maximize those things. So this is my early pick. This is my early front runner for the best of the dogmas.
The last one here is the RZA, Redding, Cog, and Claw. That's what it says. You can reroll wound rolls of one in the fight phase for units with this dogma. I'm not crazy about this one, with what, to your point, you were just making about some of the just devastating weapons in this, but this is something you could build towards.
Well, I mean, I think the sharpest contrast is what we're seeing. So there's right now there's three factions. You've got Raven Guard, Alpha Legion, and now one of the Mechanicum Forge Worlds that gives you the minus one to hit if you're outside of a particular range. The big substantive difference, and it harkens back to this final dogma that we're talking about, is with Alpha Legion and Raven Guard. They're set up to close the distance, right? Alpha Legion wants to get in your grill and shoot you at rapid fire range, 12 to 18 inches. Raven Guard wants to shoot you and then get into close combat with you, right? That it's arguably a close combat army.
With Tickle Claws.
With Tickle Claws, exactly. This Mechanicum army is the first one that is set up to be a shoot first, ask questions later army, that also has this minus one to hit at 12 inches. So it's A, encouraged by its weapon set to be farther away from you, and now B, encouraged by the dogma to be farther away from you. Dogma that Paul just talked about was, hey, I'm reroll ones to hit in the fight phase.
To wound in the fight phase.
This is one of those things that would be a good ability for Raven Guard or even Alpha Legion, because they want to close the gap and get into close combat with you. But there's very few that I can see list designs for ADMEC and Skitarii that are like, yeah, we really want to close the gap and get into – it's not an assault army. It's capable in assault and has good counter-assault units, but that's not its primary function. And so,
I think you could build towards it, but you're going against the grain of the army.
You would certainly agree with me that it's not its primary function. This is not orcs or blood angels.
You're going against the grain of some of the innate tools in the Adeptus Mechanicus list, I think, if you're gearing up for close combat.
That's exactly right. And so I think that this particular – if you're going to go with this dogma, you might have a particular detachment that says, all right, I'm going to take one detachment of this guy's, and these are my counter-assault dudes. And so I've got this one, I don't know, Vanguard detachment for my Rust Stalkers are going to be from this particular Forge World, and they're good at assault. That makes sense to me, but you're certainly not going to do a full army design about this particular dogma.
I don't think you should. That's probably more to the point. I think you could.
Yes, well, I don't think you will.
Because Electro Priest and stuff, they've got melee, they can close the distance, and then they, you know, I don't know. Look, I'm telling you, that's probably not the best way to go about doing it. I think the standouts are the ones that we've highlighted as some really critical things, such as manipulating the canticles, neg one to hit from distance, and being able to punish people with that fire. And the
six plus feeling of pain, army wide six plus feeling of pain is pretty strong.
Yeah, that's good. So when I mentioned some of the things being very similar, we did a little looking around at the Cataphron destroyers. Now, these guys have been kind of written off in 8th, and with what I'm seeing on the tabletop, I don't know that they should be.
Well, what makes you think that the destroyers deserve a second look? Is it access to new stratagems, or is it just their inline profile? Because if I'm not mistaken, nothing in their points has changed.
I don't think that it has. What do they run now points-wise, Chris, in the index?
So the Cataphron Destroyer is 35 points stock. Heavy Grav is 30. And then they have the Phosphor Blaster, which is 8. So that puts it, 73 points a model? Or you can take the Plasma Culverin, which is 27 points. But you know, it all depends on what you're trying to kill with them, right?
I think so. And I think the reason I think they're worth a second look, now maybe you don't beef up the unit to max, but with the Heavy Grav Cannon, it is Heavy 5. They hit on fours. That's the thing you gotta adjust to. But it does 3 damage against things with a 3+ armor save. And I'm seeing lots of vehicles that have a 3+ armor save on the table.
Yeah.
I mean, I certainly think that there's something to be said for the destroyers now that you have the dogmas, right? I mean, we just talked about pick the top three dogmas that we just referred to. You know, these Cataphron destroyers, they're T5, and they have only a 4+ save. That's not super resilient, right? If you're going to spend 73 points on a 3-wound model, you generally want him to not have, I mean, he gets hit with a heavy bolter and he's saving on 5-ups. And that's not great.
Let me counterpoint that, and I'll get your point in just 1 second. With an effective range of 36 inches and with the mechanic of going the way they go first is traditionally rolled for now in events, I think they've got an impressive threat range with some alpha strike potential.
There's no doubt about that, right? I don't disagree with you at all. But that doesn't change the fact that I'm going to pay, quite literally, 219 points for 9 4+ wounds, right? I don't mean to get super granular on people.
No, this is a valid discussion. This is the point of what this is how you decide whether or not the unit is right for you.
Exactly. And I think to me, as a, you know, if I'm list designing for this, I'm like, all right, I can spend, it is quite literally 219. I'm going to round up and call it 220. I'm going to spend 220 points for 3 models, all of which have a 4-up save, no advantages to toughness, no advantages to save, that have a 4+. That's really unsurvivable. That's like a Storm Raven looks at you funny and you're dead for 220 points. And while it does have an effective threat range of 36 inches, it'll chew up a rhino or something like that. If you're hitting on 4s with a heavy weapon, I'm moving, so now I'm hitting on 5s.
They don't take the penalty for moving in.
Oh, they do not. They don't have a penalty. Okay, fair enough. No.
So that's another reason deal. I think it's a point in their favor. That's why I brought in the effective real threat range of that 36 inches.
That's fair. I wasn't sold on these guys in the index. Certainly not. Now, however, with the dogmas and with the canicles, there's something to be said for them, because now for that 220 points, you're hitting me on – Marines are hitting me on 4s. Or I have a 6-up feel no pain. Or I'm enjoying 2 canicles because of call. Whatever the case may be.
Some of those could be re-rolling morale checks. You know, there's things to do. There's things in the canicles that could help out the unit.
Correct. And there's characters that could potentially allow you to re-roll 1s with the area of effect and that, et cetera. So there's some force multipliers that put the destroyers back on the table. I don't want to castigate the internet or for anyone else who's listening at home be like, oh man, Force Narrative guys said the Cataphron destroyers are good. No, they're not. They weren't prior to this release. But they're back on the table now as a menu option.
You got to look at the way that things develop too. I mean, we are seeing, I know that we all thought the vehicles were really good, but now we're seeing a ton of vehicles. Razorbacks, Dreadnoughts, Storm Ravens, you name it. We are seeing this stuff on the table.
Decimators for the Chaos List, the Forge World Decimators are everywhere.
Yeah, we advocated like 6 of those Nurgle tanks that are coming out also.
Yeah, run them up and explode them. Exactly.
Yeah, they're going to be everywhere. And I think that now, this stuff, it only gets you the extra damage against 3+ armor saves. So again, I think this is going to be situational. And then we will, there's like 27, almost 30 stratagems in this book. And some of them are Forge World specific. And those are the things that I think are going to help bring out the flavor of the army. I want to point out the destroyers, with what we're seeing a lot on the table right now, and some of the other things in this book, are an option.
They certainly are. The stratagems and the dogmas, I mean, it's another animal in the ecosystem. I, for one, am most excited about the Castellan robots and the Onager. But
the Castellan robots, I think they're the exact same, gentlemen. So that's what I'm talking about. If you've been playing with them and you like the way they worked before, they're going to work
even better now. Yeah.
Yeah, because you're going to get to add stuff to them that they didn't have before. Stratagems, relics, warlord traits, and whatever.
Yeah, I mean, the robots are, in my opinion, one of the best models I think it's the number one, maybe it's certainly top 3 unit choices for Adeptus Mechanicus. 6 wounds at toughness 7 with a 3+ save. They're fast at 8 inches a turn.
They have an invulnerable save also.
They have an invulnerable save of 5+, and it's a dramatic invulnerable save. It is a fancy one. It says if I roll a 6, the wounds are going to come back at you.
Yeah, the unit that made the attack suffers a mortal wound.
So the robots have, I mean, one of the big things that the Castellan robots have is they have battle protocols, one of which is called the Aegis Protocol. And it adds 1 to your armor or invulnerable saving throws. In the index, this allowed you to have a, obviously with a 5+, you went from a 6+ invulnerable save to a 5+. And why that mattered was with the repulsor grid, which said every time you rolled a 6 for your invulnerable save, the unit that made the attack suffered a mortal wound. In the new codex, and Paul, you can read the exact language if you please.
It says, in addition, each time you roll a 6 after rerolls but before modifiers for the repulsor grid, that's when it bounces the mortal wound. So the +1 from the Aegis protocols will no longer benefit you.
Yeah,
so on the bounce. It's going to give you a 4+ invulnerable save, but not doesn't benefit the bounce.
Right. So the index, the bounce helped you. The new book doesn't. But that doesn't change the fact that when you roll 6s on your invulnerable save, you're bouncing mortal wounds back to you. Anecdotally, I played at the series event a couple weekends ago that we talked about. In that tournament, I played my first round opponent had, I think, 10 Castellan robots. And in my first round of shooting, my entire Imperial Guard, 2,000 points of Imperial Guard shot at him, and I did a total of 7 wounds to him, and he did 8 wounds to me. Just on mortal wounds bouncing back because he rolled some 6s. And so all of my freaking
that's unfortunate.
Manticores were just like receiving wounds. And that's a real possibility. So the Castellan robots, very, very good. And then you add these dogmas to them. And the one that matches up, I think, best with the robots is the dogma that it gives them the 6+ feel no pain. If you put a 6+ feel no pain,
that's your word. It's not a feel no pain, but that's just something that we can relate to.
It's the common parlance so that everyone can understand exactly what's going on here. That particular dogma essentially says when you lose a wound, you roll a die. If you get a 6, you ignore that wound. So when you put that on a 6-wound model, such as a Castellan robot, you're essentially increasing by raw math. And I know there's variances, but you're increasing the survivability of a robot by 17% without any points increase. Just full stop. I'm taking these
it's
robots.
Good. When you set the units up, this Aegis protocol is in effect, and you can attempt to change the protocol to either the Conqueror protocol or the Protector protocol. And the Conqueror protocol says while the battle protocol is in effect, the unit cannot shoot, but it fights twice. The Protector protocol is where it's at, though. While this battle protocol is in effect, the unit cannot move or charge, but you can double the number of shots it makes with each of its range weapons, i.e. the Heavy Foster Blaster's type becomes Heavy 6, and the Incendiary Combustor's type becomes Heavy 2d6. That is a lot of shots.
A ton of bullets,
and that's why you
except
see them
when
right
it's
now.
Not. But yeah,
yeah. Well, yeah. That's why you see them right now. These things are incredibly strong because you get to manipulate what their effectiveness is over the course. And T7 with a 3+ save, potentially 2+ save with the Aegis protocol, potential 4+ save with the Aegis protocol, adding ++ with the stuff in the codex, they're just going to get better. And I believe they're the same points. So in the codex, the Castellan robot is 65 points. What's their ranged weapon? They've got the. The Heavy Phosphor Blaster is 15 points, and the Incendiary Combustor is 21 points. Does that check out in the index?
Well, the 65 points is right, and the Incendiary Combustor is 21, and was it the Heavy Phosphor Blaster?
Yes.
15.
I think that's all in line. Oh, and the Castellan Fist, 35 points.
Yeah, the Strong Hand is 35 points.
Yeah, so same points, still good. I think they are a big benefit or a big strong point in the army. We have seen on the tournament scene armies that are comprised largely of these guys and Call. Now, I don't know, will Call be the best one and Mars be the best one with these guys? Might have to change that up a little bit, but the offensive and defensive power of these robots still exist.
I certainly think, and this is just Andrew's gold read, but I certainly think that the Castellan robots are the strongest unit in the Codex. They will continue to be the strongest unit in the Codex, and they will be the best competitive option. Every quest in this Codex for a tournament build starts with the robots.
We'll come back and talk about the Dune Crawlers, a couple other units, and stratagems, relics, and warlord traits.
Sounds like a party.
Battlehaven, the world's premier miniatures gaming retreat, is happening this fall. Visit us on Facebook and at battlehaven.us. Join us for 4 days and nights of epic battles, gourmet meals, and luxury accommodations. Incredibly fun, amazingly affordable. Battlehaven.
Hey everybody, we are back. Thanks for joining us for our Adeptus Mechanicus rundown. Again, very similar to the index with the addition of relics, warlord traits, and stratagems. I got Andrew Whitaker.
What's up, homies?
Chris Morgan.
Yo.
And we picked up Ricky Addington.
Finally, let's talk Sigmar, right?
We will. We're going to have a very special Sigmar episode coming up pretty soon.
A very special episode? Does one of us get hooked on drugs and you have to wean us off of it?
This isn't Oprah, Ricky.
No, Family Ties. I grew up on Family Ties.
I think you're going to want to dial in for this one, Ricky.
Good.
You're going to discuss some things pertinent to your interest.
Okay, okay.
And vices.
My wife is going to be so excited for that Wednesday when I can take the week off.
Oh, no. No, we're going to do that. It's going to be an addition to the normal schedule.
Don't tell her that, but yeah, all right, fair enough.
I mean, you still got to show up on Wednesday.
It's my goal in life to see Andrew Whitaker at an Age of Sigmar grand tournament. It's going to happen.
Yeah, that's my goal in life is to win the presidency, so we'll see what happens first.
The Onager Dune Crawler. This thing looks cool. It's got all kind of gun options. This is the vehicle of the army. And in my opinion, one of the reason this army is going to kind of struggle with the way the game is right now is because they don't have effective transports and they aren't maximizing this vehicle game right now. This Doomcrawler and the Castellan robots that we just talked about are kind of some shining beacons in that, if you ask me.
Now, how do you feel about the Dragoons too? Because don't those are vehicles as well, aren't they?
Well, they are, but they're like Sentinels. They don't degrade. They've got six wounds. They're
so they're good. Not true tanks, basically.
Yeah, in practice, they're all right, but they are just more like a dreadnought. You know, have their toughness 6 instead of toughness 7. Anyway, they're just not the same. They're not the same as a real vehicle or a Razorback or any kind of effective transport to hold some of these cool troops in. You know, most of your stuff is going to be exposed all the time. And what we've seen competitively anyway is that high toughness, lots of wounds, and a good armor save is how you live past the Alpha Strike.
Seems reasonable.
Sometimes. but this Doomcrawler, it's got a Blitzit skill of 3+, which is good. A lot of the stuff in this codex hits on a 4. This hits at full damage when it's got 11 wounds remaining. It hits on a 3+ with an 8-inch move, and you can put some good weapons on it. It comes stock with the Eradicator Beamer, which is a 36-inch range heavy D6 strength 8 weapon. A neg 2 armor save does D3 damage. When attacking units within 12 inches, change the weapon's type to heavy D3, but resolve the shots with an AP of neg 4 and a damage of D6. That's the stock weapon it comes on it.
Yeah, that's like the inverse conversion beamer, right?
The anti-conversion beamer.
Everything's got its opposite.
Yeah. Well, the Neuron Laser, that's the 48-inch heavy D3 strength 10 weapon neg 4 AP with D6 damage. And then the worst you can do damage with this weapon is 3. You treat rolls of 1 and 2 for the damage roll as 3 instead.
Man, I'd love to see more of that around.
Yeah, no kidding. With the way reroll, this is how I actually lost. I was playing an Ultramarine list against the Index Admech version, and that's how I lost the Redemptor Dread, was to this gun.
Womp womp.
Yeah, it was, I mean, but that was, you know, that was, it basically threaded, it maxed out. You know, you got the D3 shots and then, did a total of like 15 damage, I think, or something. Or sorry, 12 damage. It was a lot, a whole lot of damage.
Savage.
Yeah. And then the Twin Heavy Phosphor Blaster, 36-inch range, heavy 6. Units attacked by this weapon do not gain any bonuses to their saving throw for cover, which is all right. It is a neg 2 AP, 1 damage. But the Icarus Array, this is the weapon I think that is, it's fairly inexpensive. It's 40 points, and it's a weapon that gives 3 profiles. And we talked round and round about this when we were trying to decide how this weapon actually worked. And I think we figured it out based on deduction and things like maybe combi weapons, you know, and the shooting rules, you know, who knows?
And words.
Yeah, words. But the Icarus Array, when attacking with this weapon, a singular weapon, that's the kind of the crux of it, you can fire with all 3 of the profiles below. It's got the Daedalus Missile Launcher. Everything is 48 inches, which is nice. There's no range band issues with this, so everything is 48 inches. The Daedalus Missile Launcher, heavy 1, strength 7, negative 3 AP with D6 damage. The Gatling Rocket Launcher, heavy 5, does not stink. Strength 6, negative 2 AP, 1 damage. And then the Twin Icarus Autocannon, heavy 4, strength 7, negative 1 AP, 2 damage apiece. And you add 1 to all hit rolls made for this weapon against targets that can fly. Subtract 1 from hit rolls against all other targets.
This is the gun that says, hey, you're flying too close to the sun.
Yeah, 48-inch range is a that's a lot with this type of weaponry, and then hitting flyers on a 2+. Now, we've seen a lot of Demon Prince armies with flying stuff. Magnus and Mortarion are flyers. Storm Ravens are flyers. And these are things that can realistically threaten them by doing some wounds.
It's a million shots, too. I mean, that's insanely cool.
Now, let's talk resiliency on this thing for a sec. I remember in 7th edition, it had the rule where if you had many of them close to each other, it improved their invulnerable save. Is that still a thing? Or is that not a thing that became a thing again in the Codex?
The Immunatus Force Field. This model has a 5+ invulnerable save. You can reroll invulnerable saving throws of 1 for any Onagar Doomcrawler that is within 6 inches of at least one other friendly. So it's not improving it, but you reroll the 1s.
So it is absolutely different than what it was before. On average, I feel like being able to just take 1 and having the 5 up is going to be better.
This thing is a bit of a buffer to units around it. It has a broad spectrum data tether. Forge World units within 3 inches of any friendly models equipped with this broad spectrum data tether at the start of the morale phase add 1 to their leadership for the duration of the phase.
Now, what is the general leadership, you would say, in an AdMech army?
You mean like the average stat?
Yeah.
Like between 7s and 8s.
6. Well, I think the infiltrators or rust stalkers are 6. The leader 7. Rangers 6, 7.
It's going to be rare that you're rolling on something lower than a 7.
Yeah, with being able to pick your casualties, your sergeant's going to live.
You know. Even with the cataphron. I mean,
yeah, it looks like the princeps are
all... Worst case scenario, you're rolling on 6s.
Yeah. Yeah, this does benefit from mechanicals, and I know we haven't gone down the list of what the mechanicals do, but it's important that this vehicle and even things like the robots and other things, pretty much everything in the unit or in the army benefits from the mechanicals special rules. So that's kind of, I think, what the highlights from this book that we are not the book, from the units, the highlight from the units that we talked about. And these guys, I do believe that these are a standout in the robots that we just talked about are the standout units. If you could fill your army with those, you're going to win a bunch of games.
And just to reiterate kind of what you were saying before, Paul, like we had this discussion about the Icarus Array and how it operates and how shooting with it works. It has that amazing firepower. And I think that we can say that for 40 points, That's a good number of dice to be rolling.
That's just the gun. We can check the points on the crawler itself, but the gun itself is 40 points.
Yeah, 40 points for the gun. But the gun is all three weapons, and you can shoot all three weapons, but it is one gun. So you've got to choose the one thing that you want really dead, because you're not going to split that up among other targets.
I really want it to be the other way, but I think you're right. So the base points on the Doomcrawler is 90 points. So for 90 points plus the Icarus Array for 40 points, you're looking at 130 points for that vehicle we just talked about. I think that's a steal.
That's a really good deal.
It has a little bit of a buff to other similar units of its type around it. It can buff the leadership a little bit of the army around it, even though you do have command points you can burn around it. But it's a steal, I think, for the points and what vehicles bring to the game right now. And that is a lot of firepower. We see lots of things with... Remember, fly lets you also fall back and shoot. It's an incredibly powerful ability. Lots of things that you're going to see competitively will have the fly word, and this is hitting that stuff on 2 from a long way off.
Yeah, that's where I think a lot of the heavy-hitting fire base for this, and I think that especially with someone like Call with the Mars, I keep wanting to call it a chapter tactic, but Forge World Mars with Call.
It's a dogma. It's a Forge World dogma.
The dogma. Thank you. The damage potential from range is extremely high if you have a bunch of these around, and they're pretty cheap. I mean, 100... I wish I had as solid a fire base for that amount of points, like in my army. That would be refreshing. A lot of these surrounded by Call with the rerolls are going to end up putting out a lot of firepower and putting out a lot of hurt. Now, I don't think that that's going to keep them safe from the hardcore alpha strikes. And I feel like psychic powers are really going to hurt AdMech as an army. Are there any relics, Paul, that you know that protect against psychic powers?
The, I did not spot one immediately, so don't quote me, because there are a lot of relics, and some of them are specific to the Forge Worlds themselves, but I did notice that a lot of them don't need a replacement. You can just get them. So, you know, a lot of relics that we saw in the Space Marine book when that first came out is that they had to replace a power axe or a fist or a shield or something like that, and there was just a few of them that you could just take for your army, but in the Adeptus Mechanicus, there seemed to be a bunch that you could just take and didn't necessarily require a specific replacement. Do you mind if I go down the canicles first?
No, that's fine. I was just, you know, on the subject of what you're going to see from this army and how the Dune Crawlers are going to fit in. Like, I'm thinking as an opponent, and if I'm staring down the table at a bunch of these, and if that becomes really popular, which I think it will, and because every AdMech army up to this point has had some of those in them anyways, I really think that psychic powers are going to be telling.
For the canicles, Incantation of the Iron Soul, you can reroll fail morale test. This may be exactly what it is in the index. Litanies of the Electromancer is the second one. Roll a d6 for each enemy unit that is within 1 inch of an affected unit. On a roll of a 6, that unit being rolled for suffers d3 mortal wounds. So that's the old shock. Chant of the Remorseless Fist. They sound cool. You can reroll any hit rolls of 1 for effective unit in the fight phase. Shroud Psalm. Affected units gain the bonus to their armor saving throw as if they were in cover. Units already in cover are unaffected. So I guess if you're charging across the field, then maybe you want that. Invocation of the Machine Might. Affected unit have +1 strength. And then Benediction of the Omnissiah. You can reroll failed hit rolls of 1 for effective units in the shooting phase. And this is one we're going to see with being able to manipulate this chart a little bit. You can get some army-wide strength from being able to reroll ones and also rerolling morale test. So ones and sixes in this chart are pretty strong, if you ask me.
I'd agree with that.
So the stratagems, so we'll get to the relics and stuff in a minute. There are a bunch of stratagems. I mentioned there are 27 stratagems in this book, I believe, on a quick count. And some of them are, of course, Forge World Dogma specific. And I want to bring up one that's similar to the one that's in the Chaos Space Marine. This is called the Fresh Converts. And this is for the Agrippina stratagem. This allows you to recycle a unit up to 20 power level. This is pick one of your Agrippina Servitors, Agrippina Cataphron Destroyers, or Cataphron Breachers as follows. And then you spend 1 command point for a power level rating of 5, spend 2 command points, power rating of 10, and you spend 3 command points to get up to a power rating of 20. You can pick a unit with a power rating of, or sorry, you cannot pick a unit more than power rating of 20. Remove the chosen unit from the battlefield. You can then set it up again as you would a unit arriving from as reinforcements. Set up the unit in your deployment zone within 6 inches of the edge of the battlefield and more than 9 inches from any enemy model at its full starting strength.
So I have a unit of 6 Cataphron Destroyers. I lose 5 of them, pop this thing off. They come back at 6 Cataphron Destroyers.
Yes.
That's terrible. That doesn't sound very good at all.
Yeah, I think there's some strengths here too, because this is one of those things that you can, there's no exclusion from pulling them out of close combat.
Yeah, that alone makes it, you know, that just being able to pull them out of combat and, you know, get them back into shooting without penalty is a win on its own. And I'm going to get all my models back up to strength.
Now, with it. Maybe me being too enamored with this particular stratagem is what made me kind of speak so kindly of the Cataphrons, and their, even though there are a lot of points and their abilities in the first part of the show. But I think if you're going to use them, you might want to look at this Forge World Dogma.
Yeah. Do you think that the points are, I missed kind of the first part there, but do you think the points are fair to what they do now?
They're, or
do you
think pricey. Because you have to buy so much stuff with them. I mean, we're looking at, what are we looking at, like an 80-something point per model?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's a bunch. But if you think of it this way, let's say your 900-point unit gets killed down to one man, and then you bring 900 points back.
Yeah, then, you know, then it's a bargain.
Now, do not spend 900 points of your 2,000 points on that one unit.
Aww.
Yeah, I've been, like, biding my time over here. I got a lot of opinions about this. There's some things to be done vis-a-vis the Cataphron Destroyers and making it happen. I don't necessarily know that bringing 9 of them at power level 20 and then just counting on your opponent to kill all but one of them.
Kill eight and two wounds on one.
Oh, ha ha. And you, like, stroke your evil mustache and then
bring the whole rest of the unit. I burned 3 command points, and now I have this whole army back, right?
Step grow evil.
If that happens...
Just give me a couple turns while I march back over there.
No, if that happens, like, with all due respect to you and or your meta, but you're playing against a terrible player, right? Like...
could just be unlucky. This could happen in turn one. You could get alpha struck down to one guy.
It could. You're
going to do it once.
I could win the lottery tomorrow.
And then you have to burn your command.
A strategy like that would work against me because I have this habit of leaving a model alive with just one wound when I really need it to die.
Even against all best efforts.
When can you pop that stratagem? Does it have to be in your turn?
Yes.
Okay, so there's the big issue.
At the end of your movement phase, use the stratagem at the end of your movement phase.
Yeah, see, that's what makes it super situational, is if I have 9 of these dudes, I lose 8 of them. Well, you know, how many points do I'm going to have to burn the command points to keep them from failing their leadership, and then burn more command points to bring them back. So
you just got you got to have a Doom Crawler next to him, so you're 1,000 points into this strategy already.
Ultimately, what we're talking about here is... You know, to take 6, 7, 8, 9 of these guys is going to cost you 700 points. And then the Doom Crawler that you're going to have to take is another 200 points.
To give them
the plus
one their leadership.
Exactly. So, yeah, you know, it's cost prohibitive. It's not an effective competitive strategy. And that's a problem. That said, there's an argument to be made that says instead of taking the men squads, which the traditional thinking from a competitive list building standpoint is to take the minimum number of units to put these squads in.
Yeah, the minimum number of models for the squads.
Minimum number of models to put into this unit. So if I'm going to take, for example, breachers, I'm going to take 3. I'm going to take 3 Cataphron breachers. If, for example, I'm going to take Sanguinary Guard, right? Well, then I'm going to be hospitalized because I've clearly been poisoned. But assuming that I wasn't actively poisoned, I'm going to take 4 of them because that's the minimum squad choice. This stratagem changes that dynamic such that you might take more than the minimum so that you can maximize this particular stratagem's power. I think the sweet spot vis-a-vis the destroyers is fewer than the 2 command point power.
It's right? Something in the 10 power level.
In the 10 power level, you want to take 6 of these guys, not 9. Because then that gives you the 2 command points, much... I know it sounds so stupid.
No, it's not. It's an economy.
It's so much more achievable, especially in the mid game on turn 2, turn 3. Then, oh my god, I have to burn 3 command points to make this thing happen. And then, and conversely, if we've got a squad of 6 destroyers, well, I mean, if you're playing a competent opponent, he's going to think to himself, man, if I don't kill that whole unit, my opponent is going to just burn the command points and they're going to come back to life at full power. Right? It doesn't take rocket scientists to figure out what a problem that is, right?
This is not a once per game thing either. This is something you could just do.
It's exactly. It's every time. He's going to target prioritize accordingly. He's going to say to himself, okay, I have to kill that squad until it's dead. Because if I leave a single destroyer with a single wound left, then they're going to come back to life and all of my shooting has been wasted. And so a capable opponent is going to make sure that this really isn't a problem. Or rather, let me rephrase that.
They're going to kill the Doom Crawlers first.
Exactly. They're going to target prioritize based their realization of how much damage they can do to your army. Take that for what it's worth. Realize how powerful it is, and then let it
saturate. Know that your opponent's going to know that.
Know that your opponent is going to know it, and then let it saturate on you. Take if you're on a tabletop, take the extra minute and a half to really think through what damage you're going to do. And if you can't kill them till they're dead, don't shoot them. Don't shoot them.
To Chris, to your question earlier about some anti-psyker stuff, there is a stratagem here. This is Steel Mine Iron Logic for the Grey Forge World Dogma. Use this stratagem when an enemy psyker manifests a psychic power within 24 inches of one or more of the Grey infantry units. Roll on a D6, on a 4+, that psychic power is resisted and its effects are negated.
Hmm. And that's a stratagem, you said, yeah?
Yeah, it's one command point.
Okay. So the nice thing about that is that it's like the old rune staff from Space Wolves from way back when. The bad thing is you get one shot.
Yeah, how weird is it that the matched play is actually a tamer version. Like, in, if we were playing an open narrative play, you could burn all these. You could do the one cool thing over and over and over again.
I would have no command points by the end of the first turn.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I think you're right. There is the Lucius stratagem. It's kind of cool because it fits in with like Lucius pods and stuff. Use this stratagem during deployment. You can set up a Lucius unit from your army in a teleportarium chamber instead of placing it on the battlefield. At the end of any of your movement phases, can teleport it onto the table. 9 inches away from an enemy, of course. But this is not restrictive of an infantry or anything. It's just any Lucius unit for one command point used during deployment.
And Lucius is the Forge World?
Yeah.
Can I make an Imperial Knight Lucius?
You can't. You cannot. The knights are in this book, but they are not Adeptus Mechanicus, and they have a household keyword, not a Forge World keyword.
Just wanted to make sure. Okay.
Yep.
So you've got to remember, Ricky, that Creed isn't part of the Mechanicum or the Mechanicus. And he's currently in a box. So,
fair enough.
The Stygies 8 stratagem is the clandestine infiltration. This is essentially infiltrate. At the beginning of the first battle round, but before the first turn begins, the unit is revealed, set up anywhere on the battlefield that is more than 9 inches away from any enemy models.
And that's for Stygies 8?
Yep.
Can Imperial Knights be Stygies 8?
Imperial Knights cannot be any of these guys.
I'm just kidding.
I'm detecting a theme here.
They can't. The Metallica strategy.
That's the kind of wish listing you get when you tune into Forge the Narrative, right? Just cackling,
quality work right there.
His Northern Virginia butt off, just be like, whoa, wouldn't it be awesome if this other wildly ridiculous thing was to happen? Hilarious. Awesome.
Metallica's Deafening Assault. Use this stratagem at the start of the morale phase. Pick one of your Metallica units. All enemy units within 6 inches of that unit must subtract one from their leadership characteristic until the end of the phase.
I mean, that's one more dead model.
Yeah. I mean, it's one command point. I don't think this is amazing, but at the same time, it is a model.
You will potentially lose one extra guy. That's what that power says.
Yeah.
The Grey Knight psychic power, goes off your leadership. For the mortal wounds. But again, that's one more mortal wound on something, you know, so it's hopefully you didn't paint your models up in third colors, if you ask me.
The RZA stratagem, plasma specialist. Use this stratagem before a RZA unit from your army attacks in the shooting phase. Add one to the wound rolls made for all this unit's plasma weapons and increase the damage inflicted by any plasma weapon by one. For the purposes of this stratagem, a plasma weapon is any weapon profile that includes the word plasma.
Now we're talking.
I mean, the extra damage. Overcharge them bad boys and just go to work.
Yeah. Extra damage, one to the wound roll. I will take that.
So now I'm going to read you a couple of the knight's stratagem. This is just Knight of the Cog is Adeptus Mechanicus stratagem. Use the stratagem at the start of any battle round before determining the mechanical of the Omnissiah will be in effect. Select a Quester Mechanicus unit from your army that is within 12 inches of a friendly Adeptus Mechanicus character. That unit gains the mechanicals of the Omnissiah ability until the start of the next battle round. Does that do anything for you, Ricky?
It does a little bit. That's pretty okay right there. I'll take that.
Get a canicle for one of your Quester Mechanicus. That's the knights.
Yep.
The knights themselves, I think their knights are knights and they're streaky.
Yeah.
If you play knights, you're occasionally going to run into someone who is just not equipped to deal with knights. But most competitive armies can deal with knights.
That's been my experience playing them ever since they come out. It's like you win big or you lose big when you have knights. You know, either they get shot off the table and they're not a factor, or, you know, they just don't have what they need to take them out and they just run amok.
Rotate ion shields. Use this stratagem when an enemy unit targets a Quaestor Mechanicus unit from your army that has an invulnerable save. You can add one to any invulnerable saving throws made for that unit until the end of the phase. I think that is pretty darn good. 3+ invul.
Yeah.
In the relic section, there are some of the ones that we have come to know, be familiar with anyway. The Uncreator Gauntlet. Models with a power fist only. This is one of the ones you have to replace. It's a melee weapon, x2 strength, -3 AP, d3 damage. When attacking with this weapon, you must subtract one from the hit roll. I don't know if I'm a fan of that. I know that's a balancing thing because there's no initiative anymore, but I think that we're in a point in the game where it's a very aggressive game now that I don't know if we need that -1 to hit. But if everyone gets it, it's about, you know, it's fine.
Yeah.
It's all fair.
Oh, what's the extra benefit?
Each time you successfully wound an enemy vehicle with this weapon, the target suffers one mortal wound in addition to any other damage. So you got multiple attacks. This attack is doing multiple damage, and each successful wound roll is going to do an additional mortal wound.
Now, that'll add up. I'm trying
to
look through here and see who gets power.
D3 damage. I mean, so you know, you're going to get two attacks, get through, two wounds, get through, you know, maybe it starts to add up. I don't know. The Skull of Elder Nicola. That's the one that you shocks people all around. He still does the same thing. Once per game in your shooting phase, the bear can unleash the power bound within the skull. Should the bear do so, roll a dice for each enemy vehicle within 2d6 of them and roll on a roll of a 2+, that unit suffers a mortal wound. And that's a free route. You don't have to replace anything for that. You can just choose that relic.
So was that one use only, or was that once a turn?
That is once per game.
Yeah. Once per game, okay. That'd be fun against those Razorback parking lots.
Yeah. The Otto Caduceus of Arkan Land. Pretty sure I got that.
Sounded close enough.
No comments from the peanut gallery, so we're going to go with that. At the start of each of your turns, the bearer of this relic heals one wound. In addition, when the bearer uses an ability to repair a friendly Adeptus Mechanicus model, such as Master of Machines, you may re-roll the dice when determining how many wounds are regained. I don't think that's bad.
No, it's got utility.
If you built, say, okay, you've built your fire base of these Castellan robots and Doom Crawlers. So these jokers are hanging out in the back, healing these things off with a little bit more efficiency. That's going to be tough to dig out, if you ask me.
Yeah. I mean, if you have that set up, your opponent is going to have to commit. And, I mean, you can almost, you're going to know if you can make a unit that tough, they're either going to have to commit everything to it or ignore it. And that helps you because you limit his options. So I like that.
Yeah. The Raiment of the Technomartyr, and this will be the last one I read. Roll a dice for each time the bearer of the Raiment of the Technomartyr loses a wound. On a 6, that model does not lose a wound. In addition, each time a friendly Forge World model within 6 inches of the bearer fires Overwatch and you roll a 6 to hit, you can make one bonus attack for the same weapon against the charging unit. These attacks cannot generate further attacks. I think you're playing the game of that you will eventually be assaulted. Something will make it to you. Well, maybe they won't. But if they make it to you, maybe they don't have a lot of things left. So maybe you want to beef up your ability to overwatch against them.
Yeah, I feel like that's like you're you're really hoping for a lot there to make that thing go off. But, I mean, better than nothing.
You know, look. I think that this codex definitely beeps up and rounds out a lot of the Admech stuff. We're not seeing any models released for this, but in the same side, we just got all these models released. I mean, this is recent history that we got these models.
Yeah, these are all very new models that look
like. It's a new faction, yeah, practically, so, still.
Yeah.
And there's a ton of plastic kits. Everything in this army is plastic. So I wasn't expecting anything. I think it would be greedy to expect anything new. Although literally beginning this year, we got Call, which is amazing. You don't even have to use him as Call. He's got bits for days to be built out, all kind of tech priest.
And we are getting Call in his own single kit clan now. Pack. Well, it's pretty big. I don't think you'll be in a clan pack, do you? I think you'll probably be in a little box. But
it depends on where the clam's from, I guess.
Yeah. Either way, that's what we're arguing about. But the point is, we don't have to buy the whole triumvirate to get Call now. But that triumvirate was a good kit. You know, everything in that one was good.
So absolutely.
Can't really complain there.
Now, before we finish talking about like relics and stratagems and combos and things like that, the big question I have is, you know, if you have all these cool stratagems that do all these cool things, what is the best way to maximize your command point pool as an Admech player?
Oh, that is such a tough thing to say or thing to do, because I'm not crazy about the troops in this army. The buddy I was playing before, Greg, did a brigade, rolled in with 12 combat command points. But I don't think you get enough like real meat and damage dealing things in trying to go for that. I think you're going to be on the low end of command points because you're going to take a lot of the Castellan robots and the Doom Crawlers, and those things are not troop choices, and there's no way to convert them to troop choices. Like there's no force org manipulation that I've seen so far in this book. So you're going to be looking at heavy support options. So what is that? Is that the spearhead?
I believe that's spearhead.
Yeah, so you're going to be dumping a lot of points in spearhead, and maybe you pick up a supreme command. They give you, I think that's 3 command points. So what are you looking at, 5 then? No, be 3, 6, 7 command points is what you're going to be, I think, on a good day. And I may be being generous with that.
Do these guys get anything like the Defenders of Humanity rule to give them, you know, basically like OBSEC for their troops?
They do.
Is that, they do?
The troops get OBSEC, but I don't know that that's worth it. I think you need to be playing a kill my opponent to the man strategy.
Yeah, well, that was my question, because I was just sitting here thinking about it, but like, you know, like you said, there's no transports to protect them, so it's, you know, big whoop, I just shoot the three to four troops off the table.
I think that's one of the things that is going to kind of hamstring the want to include those things, because it's, you don't really have an effective way of insulating them, protecting them. And if you were to take, let's say you were to spend a bunch of points on those guys, and then you spend a few points on the other things, well, then you're pretty much dictating for your opponent what they have to shoot at, or what their weapons are good against. And so they're going to fire the weapons that are good at killing your dudes at your dudes. They're going to fire the weapons that are good at killing vehicles at your vehicles. The decision is made for them. I'm saying commit to these T7 gun platforms. Make bolters obsolete. I mean, that's not the way the edition works, but you know what I mean. It becomes increasingly a lot more difficult to dig out some 2+ toughness 7 dudes with bolters.
Yeah.
This seems like a reasonable assessment.
With 6 wounds apiece.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, now obviously 4 last cannons can ruin your day. But that's not, on the average, that's not how it's going to work. And if it does work, that's going to be a cool story that you get to share and take with you in shame for the rest of your life. So to absolutely answer your question, I think that you're going to be on the slim side of command points, because I think that's where you need to be spending your points, is on these things that are, that cost a lot, but they're also very durable and they're very killy. That's one man's opinion, but that is also what we've seen with some of the higher-end competitive ad mech stuff on the competitive scene. There are a bunch of relics and stratagems that we didn't cover. We only covered the stratagems that were specific to the Forge world. There are specific Forge world warlord traits. Maybe cover them in a bonus episode after this on the YouTube channel. Thanks for you guys that are hanging in and watching this on YouTube. If you are listening to us on the regular podcast in the way you've always done it, know that we are also on YouTube. Some things are blocked from work. That's actually why I started putting in different places, because not everyone can get to everything from their work cubes. And so try to make it as accessible as possible. But look for more content coming out talking about more in this stuff. We didn't cover the knights. The knights are in here with the households. There are no household rules specific. You can just assign a household to it, and that will determine what your faction is. But there are no additional rules right now that I saw for the household units.
I'm still holding out for some Hawk Shroud rules. So I feel like that's going to come. Like all the stuff they're talking about in there is like more like for Mechanicus aligned houses, and so there should be one that's more. We'll probably see Imperial. Well,
there's no end of supplements they can do. We're going to see. Yeah. If I were a betting man, we're going to see White Dwarf stuff. We're going to see campaign stuff after the Codex are released. That will give rules for all this stuff you're talking about. Let's take a quick break. Come back with some finishing moves.
Frontline Gaming is excited to announce that tickets are now on sale for the LVO 2018. Taking place January 26th through the 28th at Bally's Casino in Las Vegas, the event will feature gaming, seminars, and social events. Don't wait. Get your tickets at lasvegasopen.net today.
Hey, everybody. We are back. Hope you like that message from Frontline.
Yeah, man.
I got Chris and Ricky with me.
Ready to sling some paint.
Some of us are still awake.
I want to try to do something that's relevant to the armies that are coming out, in case people are breaking out new hobby goals. Want to see people's work in progress on Twitter and stuff. That's where I've been posting mine. I posted a sweet pic of Mortarion as he's work in progress. Bear with me as I struggle through the painting. This is that model is gorgeous. Not mine. The model itself is gorgeous, and it paints up easier than you might expect. Except this cloak. This cloak is going to give me fits, but I'm going to try. But that's not what this is about. This is going to be about using some decals. The ad mech, the newer armies got some really cool ad mech decals. I think you can even get some ad mech, some extended version of the decals from the Games Workshop site and Forge World. And even the knight decals and some of the space marine stuff, well, you can still blend it into your ad mech line to represent either the Forge worlds or squad markings within the Forge worlds. But their decals, they seem kind of complex, and sometimes they're a little larger with multiple designs on them. And if you don't do them the certain way, the finish has a lot to do with it, but they could cloud up and might not look as good. And so I thought it'd be a relevant topic because those are things that are going to come with everybody's admet kits now, and might as well. And but you can use this technique for any decals you're going to use. The Forge World decals come on a little bit thicker of a transfer. The slide is at least it feels like to me anyway, that the transfer, that it, like the actual film that the decal is printed on, is a little bit thicker than the other ones. So you can be a little bit more hands-on with them and get them, position them around and worry about them breaking less than you can the stock decals you may get in other places in the other Games Workshop kits.
Yeah, and with the thicker paper, one of the things that you're going to want to be ready for is if you're trying to apply that to a curved surface or something with lots of ridges, like say the back of a cloak, you're going to want to have something to soften that up just a little bit, because it's naturally going to try and retain its own shape, even when you get it soggy with water. Wouldn't you agree, Paul?
I do. And let me bring up a tip that I got from watching the Games Workshop tutorials with Duncan Rhodes. For years, I have cut out the decal as close to the design as I could, and then carefully placed it on the surface of the water and hope that it has floated there. And then when I think it's soaked for enough time, there was always a careful balance of, has it soaked enough for the paper to fall off? Is it soaked enough for it to separate in the water? Am I going to have any trouble getting it out? It's like a game you play. It's like, you know, throw me the slide, I'll throw you the whip, Indy. You know, it's one of those type of situations. But what Duncan showed us in the tip, though, is he would dip the decal in water, still in his hand, for 10 seconds or so, and then take it out and put it on a piece of tissue paper. And the water will just soak in to the paper and it will release on its own, and you won't have to worry about losing it in the bottom of your water cup.
Yeah, that's the way I've always done it. Well, because as soon as that thing sinks, then you're trying to stab it. Yeah.
I've lost many a good decal over the years to the bottom of my paint cup. Now, I mean, I do change out the water, but
But you know, you don't want to see, you know, you got that one good decal left and all of a sudden, you know, it falls off.
Dude in your squad.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, you always got that one dude who doesn't have, you know, a sim on his shoulder.
You get the skull on this one. Yeah, you get the crossbones.
You're a veteran or something. But what I always do, I stab mine with my hobby knife after I cut it out. I dip it in the water. Oh, and another thing, just while we're on water, don't use the same water for your decals as you do your paint. All right. Make sure you have, I have two cups. I have one cup for paint that I use, and then I have another cup that's specifically for decals. So there's no metallic paint particles or anything getting. I actually have three because I use a metallic.
Oh,
I have
fancy cups.
Let me go on a tangent here. I have three cups. I have one for normal paints, one for metallic paints, and then I have one for decals. That way, you never want to have metallic paints in with your normal paints, because that's gross. But the same thing applies for your decals. You don't want to have that nice white decal come out with flecks on it from something else.
I sure hope you use like something different than a cup for whatever you drink, Ricky.
Well, I have
four cups.
I guess that's the fourth
cups.
Cup. Yeah, four cups. Yeah.
I have a balanced diet of, you know, metallic flakes and non-metallic.
Painter's pyramid. Yeah. I thankfully never made that mistake, but there are tons of memes out there with marked paint water, not paint water, and like, you know, mistakes were made at some point.
And yep. I first got into modeling. My dad, I was at my grandmother's house, and I was working on a model, and I was painting it, and my dad walked by, and the cup was there, and he thought it was my drink, and he took a sip. Just grabbed it, took a sip, and I was like, wait, did you just drink that? And he's like, he got this look of dread on his face, and he's like, I guess I'll be okay. He's still alive. So
you dip the decal in the water, let it sit on its own for 10 or so seconds.
Yeah, well, sometimes a little, what I do, okay, so like my process, depending on how big the decal is, it's going to take longer, obviously, because the water's got to soak in. But I never apply a decal without a few things first. If we can back up and, you know, tell me to stop if I start rambling here, but I love decals. So, you know, the first thing you're going to do is clear coat with a gloss varnish wherever you're about to apply that decal.
Yeah, I think you're right on this. There are people that do it differently, but I think that is the most commonly accepted way.
Yeah, so what I do, I have a Vallejo gloss varnish that I use. I mean, there's a million of them out there, but just get a gloss varnish, just a clear coat, because what that does is that's going to give you the smoothest surface possible for that decal to lay on. Get that on there, go through, and you know, if you're going to do them in batches, do all your models with that clear coat, and then you got to let that stuff dry completely. It can't be remotely wet at all, or it's going to interact with the glue and the water on the decal, and then it will get cloudy and ruin everything. But once that's done, get the decal wet and place it somewhere. I just throw mine on my wet palette and my cutting mat, and I just let it sit there. And while that is soaking through and getting ready, I use either Microset or Microsol, depending on what I'm doing. So Microset is just a setting solution for your decals. It just helps the decal sit on the model and adhere better. Microsol is used on very curved surfaces. So if you're putting it on robes or shoulder pads, Microsol will actually start to dissolve the...
I use a product called Walther's Solvacet Decal Setting Solution.
Same kind of stuff, I think.
I got this bottle here in, like, I don't know, the 80s, and it's essentially been a lifetime supply.
Does it smell like straight vinegar?
I haven't gotten that close to it.
I spilled half of my Microset once, and the whole place smelled like my grandmother's bathroom or something. Like, you know, where they go, your grandmother cleans everything with vinegar, you know? So that's what my whole...
It's not a great recommendation, Ricky. Yeah. Throw that out there.
It does
have a bit of a pungent.
Methoxy-1-propanol. Those are the ingredients. So if you find something with either one of those, you're probably in the right place. This will make decals snuggle down into every crevice. That's what it says on the bottle.
And those have been a game changer for me for getting decals on. But by the time you get the micro set on there on the model, just brush that on, or whatever product you use, brush that on, and then come back, and your decal should have that slimy feel to it. If you run your fingers over it, that glue will start to feel
also not
slimy.
A great recommendation.
That's what it feels like.
Well, don't touch the decal.
Don't touch it, Ricky.
Once
just don't
the decal's on there and in the spot you want it to be. But let me take us back. Let me actually go through the steps of what you're getting the decal on the thing and some tips there.
No, that's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about before you even – I'm not talking about on the model. I'm talking about when you come back to the decal.
Oh,
that's
you go back
you know
to the
it's
decal.
Ready.
Okay.
You're going to know it's ready about because it's going to have that – you know, very slick, and I'm sorry, Chris, slimy feel to it from where the glue is finally loosened up. And you can slide that decal around on top of that paper. And then at that point, you just come over and you can use, I mean, depending on how big it is, you can use your finger, you can use your hobby knife, whatever, and you just put it in place.
So when you get ready to apply the decal to the model, what I like to do is put a little bit of water on the surface so I have plenty of liquid to work with. And in case I've waited too long to get back to the decal, I now have a little bit of extra wiggle, literal and figurative room to get that decal into the exact position that I want it.
And the Microset will do the same thing for you there as well.
Yeah, and if you get too much, if you've got, and after you've got the decal right where you want it, I occasionally use, I've seen people use paper towels, but I use a paintbrush. Whatever paintbrush I've got going around, a clean one, because it will soak up that liquid that's keeping that thing moving around.
Yeah, and I will use a paper towel a lot of times, but have you ever had it happen? You'll use the paper towel, and then all of a sudden your decal's on the paper towel. And
I use a paintbrush. I can get a little more surgical with it. I feel like I'm having a little bit more control. Now, again, as you get more accomplished and confident you can figure out what's best for you. I use the paintbrush.
What I like about a paper towel is on the bigger ones, you know, you've got a lot of the setting solution or a lot of moisture there. You can just kind of set that paper towel up to just right at the edge of that decal, and it will kind of draw that setting solution out. and help it just kind of just plant itself there. So that's kind of how I like to do it.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
Yeah. And don't do that with a micro saw. If the micro saw, you want to leave there because it's dissolving
It's eating that clear plastic.
So you don't do it with that one. You just let it sit there. And that one, if you're new to this sort of stuff, it takes a time or two to kind of get the hang of, because you're going to work with it as it's setting.
You've got a little bit of time, but not much. And this is one of the things I use the paintbrush. I'm kind of like stabbing at it.
Same thing.
Just wanting to like get it in that exact, I just want to tap it. Just want to tap it till it gets right in the spot, and then try my best not to touch it again. And then cover it with the Solvacet. And you can actually go back with the Solvacet after the you're using Microsoft. I'm using water, has dried, and you can go back with the Solvacet then to start doing some of that process.
Yeah, Microsoft, when I've used it on, like, you know, the infamous ultramarine shoulder pad, which is a nightmare to get that shape to lay down on a normal marine shoulder. So the Microsoft, you'll come in and work with it, and it will lay it down. Another trick is on some of those decals, if on rounded surfaces, instead of just cutting the decal out, go in and where you can make little cuts on the clear part so that decal can spread out.
Not on the picture itself, but what you're creating
don't cut the picture. Yeah.
Fold, easy to fold, or in this case, dissolve parts to make it conform to the shape of the model you're putting it on.
And that helps a lot.
I think so. This is the reason we're bringing this up now, because AdMech have tons of cool decals.
Tons. And they're awesome.
Yeah. And distinctive stuff. It's things that you can really make squad markings out of in a way that there's like clear sergeant decals that match the smaller squad size decals. And they can go a long way to really making your army stand out.
All the little numbers and the cogs and everything. I think that's, if you get them on there and do it right, it's very distinctive, and it helps kind of distinguish the AdMech. I mean, they're already very unique looking army, but I just love seeing those little cogs on the robes and stuff. I think it's just really cool to see that kind of archaic, you know, wizard looking robes on these dudes that are robots. And then they have, you know, instead of runes on there, they've got gears and stuff. It's such a cool look. So I definitely like it when anybody can do that.
Absolutely. And the things you're talking about, Ricky, can be used on any model. I mean, the techniques and the products work for any application of this.
And another thing I wanted to say, the micro saw, and I'm sure yours will do it as well. If you mess up a decal, this stuff you can put on there and it will dissolve it fully, and that decal can come off.
Oh, wow.
So that's what's good about it. It's good and bad, because when you're using Microsaw, you know, you get it right where you want it. But if you put too much on there, that thing is just going to it will just dissolve the whole thing.
Yeah.
So it's probably I don't want to say it, like, super advanced, but it is a step up.
I haven't had that happen unless I know I'm going like way.
No. Yeah. You're definitely going to make a concentrated effort to do that with this, or you're going to have been messing with it for too long. Like, you know, you just, it's not right. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, this thing is falling apart. But you'll get the hang of it with the micro saw. The micro set is the easiest thing in the world to use. It's fantastic. The micro saw, you got to kind of, there's a bit of a learning curve with it, but should we go on and say what we do now after we get it on there and we're happy with it?
What would you do next?
Okay. So
for me, if I can, you know, just jump in here. I've loved this conversation, because Paul, you got me a set of the Blood Angel decals while you were over in Nottingham. And it was my first experience actually putting them on a model. And one of the things that I was really worried about is that shine you get from the decal material, right? But it's like it's printed on thin plastic, and if the rest of your model is matte, how do you deal with that shine? Now, there's a couple of different ways that I figured out how to do that. Now, the first one was to use like a matte varnish, and that's great if you have nothing else on your model that you want to shine. But there's also, if you go to like a hobby store or even like a Hobby Lobby or wherever, and you find just some brush-on matte medium, and you water it down, like, say, 1:1, you know, 50% water.
Medium works that way also.
But will that do it?
Well,
oh, that's nice.
I haven't tried it with the Lamian, but I mean, again, you know, I haven't done a lot of decals in my, you know, 20 years in the hobby, just because I didn't want it to look glued on. Like I was putting stickers on from, you know, from a toy that I got at Target.
Your G.I. Joe.
Yeah, exactly. But I was very, very pleased with the effect that I was able to get. And when I showed it to one of my buddies, I said, hey, look, I just tried decals. He's like, oh, yeah, decals. I hate how it looks shiny. Oh, my gosh. That looks great.
Yeah, there's two steps after putting it on there that changes the whole thing. Yeah,
you can't just slap it on because if you don't do some of the things we're talking about, you'll see the line that you cut out. Like you'll see that ridge. It'll look very different. But now look, some of this stuff from 3 feet away, no one's ever going to care about. This is, you know, we're talking about taking up that one
glaring in your eye.
Kicking it up a notch is really what we're talking about.
Let me mention one thing though that we didn't mention between Chris's excellent step and my rambling about getting it on. Once you get that thing on, you let it dry it needs to dry for at least an hour. If it's a big decal, like some of these, like the Cadillac of decals that come on your Forge World sheets, let that thing dry for like an hour. I mean, let all the water get out of it. And then you're going to put another clear coat of gloss varnish over that. And what that does, that when that seals it in, it sandwiches your decal between two layers of gloss coat, and it also blends that shiny clear part around the decal. It blends it into the gloss coat, and basically that whole part disappears. So at that point, that decal is part of the model. It's part of the paint job at that point, and it should all be uniformly glossy. And from there, that's when you would go in and
you
do
knock
your mat.
It back. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Well, awesome, man. Thanks for all that info, and I know you got a lot of practice on your beautiful nights. And all those fancy decals.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm pretty proud of those. Yeah.
I hope you guys have enjoyed the ad. Yeah, they're great. I mean, they really are. And that was no sarcasm. It may have came out that way.
No. I took it as the compliment. Yeah.
I hope you enjoy the rundown on the AdMech stuff. And there will be more AdMech coverage. There's a lot to cover even in this smaller book, because the Devler is going to mean the details. It's not going to be the base stats and what it is. It's how you put it all together. And that's part of what we were talking about a little bit about what our ideal will look like. But we're really interested to see what other people do with it as people start putting together their own list. Anyway, you guys have a great rest of your night. We'll see you next week.
Yeah, man.
Have a good night.
I'd rather kiss a Wookiee.